You are listening to the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust's 2019 Leadership Advance Conference. The theme of the conference was listening to others, hearing the voices of our neighbors. Speaker Bishop Claude Alexander, senior pastor at the Park Church, closes the conference in this final session.
It has been a sheer joy for me to be with you during these 26 hours, and I want to particularly thank Terry for the way in which he carries this on his heart and on his mind. In our conversations leading up to this, it was very much a heartfelt call in terms of thinking through what we might deal with. And so, Terry, I certainly want to thank you for the way in which you carry this, and we praise God for you. Amen. People have asked me, how did you get here? And nobody gets here on their own. My journey to this time with you began in Cape Town, South Africa, 9 years ago, when I was introduced to Harold Smith, the then CEO of Christianity Today. And it began a friendship that has blessed my life, the opportunity to serve on the board of CT, and it was Harold who introduced me to Steve. And so if I've been of any benefit to you during this time, a large debt of gratitude goes to that man, and I want to thank you for your friendship. I want to anchor us now in Mark chapter 5, beginning with verse 21. The word of the Lord is as follows. Jesus got into the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. "My little daughter is dying," he said. "Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live." Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years she had spent everything she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe, for she thought to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I will be healed." Immediately the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him, so he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my robe?" His disciples said to him, "Look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me?" But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over." While he was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue. They told him, "Your daughter is dead. There's no use troubling the teacher now." But Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just have faith." Thus far, the word of the Lord. I want to deal with necessary interruptions. We teased out on yesterday the whole thing of the call that God places upon us to be neighborly. that the identity of our neighbor, who is anyone who is in our immediate proximity, is of secondary importance. But as well as of primary importance is being neighborly. And in Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan, we learned that it's not about how narrow you can restrict, but how broadly you can reach. It's the ability to reject judgments made from a distance and the willingness to establish proximity to see more fully and accurately and clearly. The willingness to be impacted by what you see such that you are moved to action. The willingness to be sacrificial and commit to the long term. And many of you are involved in work that really raises another issue, and that is, what were the conditions on the road that led to the man possibly being accosted the way that he was? What were the societal conditions that would cause people to be motivated to rob someone like that, beat them, and leave them for half dead? What were the conditions on the road? Were there enough lighting? Was there adequate policing? What are those conditions there? And where might that be a point of inquiry? What does it mean for us to be institutional neighbors and address those structural things that play into that type of activity? But for today, I wanna look at something else, and that is another subtle but sublime truth in this passage is the Samaritan's willingness to be interrupted. Neither stopping to see the man, bending to bandage the man, putting the man on his donkey, taking the man to an inn, or caring for the man, while at the end, none of that was on his initial agenda. It was not a part of his schedule. It was not a part of his project plan. It was an interruption. But he was willing to give the time necessary to be neighborly to the man in need. And what Jesus teaches us is that kingdom neighboring requires the willingness to be interrupted and to give time that you did not plan to give. And herein is a primary challenge, is it not? Consider the following quotes. The biggest obstacle to taking the great commandment seriously is time. That when I say I don't have time to get to know my neighbor, what I'm really saying is I don't consider my neighbor as important as everything else that I do. Consider John Ortberg, who states in his book, The Life We Always Wanted, hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. And he speaks of our suffering from hurry sickness, which robs us of the time necessary for meaningful, loving relationships. What time do you actually make for people? Not your family, not your co-workers, but for others. Well, what time do we actually make for neighbors who live next to us or near us? What time do we make to get to know those different from us? What time do we make? And if you're like me, there aren't enough hours currently in my day to make time for one more thing. But if we are going to answer this call to really make, it requires the willingness to be interrupted and to give up time that we didn't plan to give. And this is demonstrated by Jesus in the text before us. Jesus is returning to the shores of Galilee after having called The Sea of Galilee, having transformed a man from the Gala possessed by a legion of demons into one who was seated, clothed, and in his right mind. And as Jesus approaches the shore, there is a crowd awaiting his arrival who includes, we are told, the ruler of the synagogue named Jairus. It is an unusual place for Jairus to be because Jairus' peers opposed Jesus. In fact, Jairus himself may have opposed Jesus, but his current circumstance places him among those awaiting Jesus' arrival because now he needs Jesus. Isn't it interesting how need can bring people who would normally oppose you in and across your path? His need for Jesus is due to the fact that his 12-year-old daughter is deathly ill. And we are not told the cause or the specifics of the malady. We just know the effect and the current condition. All forms of treatment have proven to be helpless. His desperation has opened him to Jesus. He begs Jesus, "Will you come down to my house, lay your hands on my daughter, so that she might be healed?" And Jesus agrees. See, now Jesus, Jairus, and an increasingly large crowd on their way to Jairus' house so that Jesus can lay his hand on Jairus' daughter and she might be healed. The severity of his daughter's illness means that every minute counts. Jesus has committed himself to getting to Jairus' house. Each step appears to be one step closer to a miraculous cure, and then suddenly, with no warning, and for seemingly no obvious reason, Jesus stops. And he asks what seems to be a silly question: "Who touched me?" The disciples respond to Jesus with all of these people around you reaching out to grab you. "Why are you asking who touched me?" The disciples and Jesus are obviously on two different wavelengths. The disciples were focusing on people reaching out and grabbing Jesus, and Jesus was focusing on someone whose touch of faith drew something out of him. And he kept looking for who the person was. There was someone whose touch interrupted him, and now Jesus makes time for this person. A woman comes forward. Her story is that she had been sick with an issue of blood for 12 years, that hers was a constant menstrual flow that weakened her, rendered her ceremonially unclean, separated her from the community of faith, marginalized her, depleted her financial resources, disquieted her spirit. She was on the fringe. Everything that she tried had failed, and she was left with one more option: try Jesus. And the extent of her desperation was such that she would not risk being rebuffed by Jesus directly, because Jesus might be like everyone else and not want anything to do with her, not want to touch her, not want her to touch him, to gain ceremonial uncleanliness. So she just says, "If I could just touch the hem of his garment, I believe that power extends all the way down to that rabbinical tassel on the bottom of his robe. I'll be made whole." And therefore she presses her way into the crowd to make contact with Jesus. Look, with Jairus having sought Jesus directly, this woman seeks Jesus indirectly. Her touch of desperate faith made contact with Jesus, producing a conduit through which his power to heal flowed and immediately dried up the flow of blood and restored wholeness to her body. With the healing of Jairus' daughter on Jesus' schedule, this woman with an issue of blood interrupts the flow of Jesus' journey. And rather than continuing to Jairus' house, Jesus stops. The woman seems seemingly got what she wanted. Her bleeding ceased. Strength returned to her body. Unseen and unknown, she's now on her way back home. And with that being the case, Jesus could have kept going to Jairus' house. But he doesn't. He stops. While the woman may have been satisfied with what she received was less than what Jesus had in mind for her. And isn't that often the case? We're satisfied with less than what Jesus has in mind. And sometimes it's due to the fact that what Jesus has in mind requires more time than we're willing to spend and more exposure than we're willing to have. Like the woman, we want to just get what we want and leave without being seen or known. And it's funny, because while we don't want to be seen or known, we get upset when people don't recognize us. With Jairus in a hurry to get to his daughter, and with the woman in a hurry to get away from the crowd, Jesus stops. He's willing to be interrupted by this woman, because this woman needs more than what she received, and Jairus needs more than what he requested. You see, friends, being neighborly requires a willingness to be interrupted and make time due to your recognition of need. Neither Jairus nor this woman want Jesus to stop. Jesus stops because he knows that this interruption is an assignment in disguise. That there is purpose that neither Jairus nor this woman understand. In fact, both Jairus and the woman see Jesus as stopping as an annoyance. But what they see as an annoyance, Jesus sees as an assignment. Perhaps Jesus is trying to get us to understand that we might need to see the assignment in what annoys us. He stops because there is an assignment attached. An assignment for the woman to fulfill. She must tell what has happened. She must tell her story. She must come forward. She must be seen. She must be heard. And for 12 years, she's been in isolation. She's been shunned. She's been sought and not up for 12 years, and now Jesus says, you must tell your story. You must be seen. You must be heard. In other words, she can't be blessed the way that she was blessed, and no one knows about it. She can't view her connection with Jesus as a privatized, personalized, concierge service with no communal connection, accountability, or visibility. This is no drive-through, pick-up-and-go thing. Jesus interrupts this journey because this woman must come forward in the midst of the crowd and tell her story. Why? Because what has happened to her is not just for her. It's personal, but not private. While Jesus offers us a personal relationship, it is not to be confused with being a private relationship. There's a difference between personal and private. Personal indicates to your person. Private speaks to something that is exclusive and secret. A relationship with Jesus is personal, but not private. That is to say, there are some things that, well, they may just stay between you and Jesus. Jesus will not allow you to keep everything that he's done secret. He's blessed you to be a witness for him. He has worked in your life for it to be seen and known. This neighboring thing requires a willingness to be interrupted and make time to be a window of revelation. Jesus stops, interrupts us going to Jairus, interrupt the woman going back home, because the woman is a window of revelation. As the woman tells her story, she does not know that it parallels Jairus' experience. She was as ways. Jairus' request, if you were listening, was that Jesus come to his home, lay his hand on his daughter, that she might be well. The woman's testimony is that Jesus did not touch her, she touched the hem of his garment and was healed. In other words, Jesus didn't have to do anything for a healing to occur. He is healing all by himself. And it's not a matter of how he does it, it's a matter in faith of his being able to do it however he chooses. But it goes a little deeper than that. This woman who was unclean and denied access into the very synagogue that Jairus served has touched Jesus. Now, according to the rules that Jairus upheld, Jesus now is unclean. What does Jairus have to say about the woman and about Jesus now? How does this reconfigure Jairus' understanding? Now that an unclean woman has touched Jesus, and Jesus is now ceremonially unclean, Jairus, do you still want Jesus to come to your house? Do you still want the unclean one, ceremonially, to enter into your house and bring that quote uncleanness, unquote, with him? Do you still want him to lay his hand on your daughter? And how do you do this woman who touches Jesus and is now made whole? Can she come back into the synagogue? Will you receive her now into the fellowship? Now that she has touched Jesus and has been made whole, there are occasions where we are challenged to be windows of revelation. There are moments of unplanned interaction that may appear to be quite inconvenient, but are set up for us to be windows with which someone or some group are able to see something about God. And questions are raised, and the answers that you give reveal the person, nature, and power of God. We just saw it on film, did we not? We just read it by way of interview. That emptive love was providing windows of revelation for questions to be raised about the nature and character of God and for answers to be given. You never know who's watching you. You never know who's listening. You never know who's reading your blog posts. And like the woman did not know the parallel nature of Jairus' daughter, you don't know who's like one who's delivered one parallel to you. But if I'm in so much of a hurry that I can never feel any of myself, if I'm so much of a privatized consumer of the gospel that I'm never involved in anything that is corporate or communal, I miss out on the opportunity to bless and to be blessed. There are times when you are the woman with the word, and there are times when you are Jairus needing a word. And as inconvenient as Jairus may have felt, he needed to hear what the woman had to say. As hurried as we may think that our lives are, there are moments when we need to stop, to look, to listen. Where we need to be able to lean in, yes, to the pain, to the discomfort, to the tension, and see what God might be saying. To listen to every word, to read every chapter, to hear every bit of a prayer that is being prayed. Because there are times when you may think you are not in need, and you're desperately in need. And you never know who is listening to you, either as you're talking about your son, and as they are listening to you, they're thinking about their own children. We come thinking you're Jay Iris and finding out we're the woman. Or we come thinking you're the woman and we find out we're Jay Iris. The woman tells her story and Jay Iris hears it. Imagine the faith now that has developed within him. When she finishes, Jesus tells her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, your suffering is over." And here's another point about being neighborly. It is the willingness to be interrupted and make time to affirm the worth and value of other people. Jesus stops and calls the woman back to affirm her worth and value. She was leaving with bodily healing while still having a broken spirit. And Jesus calls her back because he knows that she is physically well, but not emotionally whole. And so Jesus takes the time to address the matter of her worth and her value by calling her daughter. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over. We're not given the family name of this woman. We're not given her first name. But Jesus speaks a word of affirmation. He calls her daughter. Prior to this encounter, she was among the unclean. She was an outcast. She was on the fringe. She was among the marginalized. She was persona non grata. And that's how she was viewed, and that's how she felt. She had a physical healing, but she was going back with that same terminology in her mind. But Jesus calls her daughter. Jesus speaks relationship. Jesus speaks inclusion. Jesus speaks affinity. Jesus speaks connection. Jesus speaks worth and value. He redefines her understanding of herself and how others understand her. By calling her daughter, he was alerting everyone in the crowd that she is their sister, that she is beloved, that she counts, that she matters. God is calling us to neighbor in such a way that we are willing to affirm the value of other people. And one of the greatest gifts that we can give anyone is the willingness to stop and see them. The willingness to stop and acknowledge them. The willingness to stop and listen to them. Just being present to someone is an act of affirmation. Have you ever needed someone just to stop and see you? Have you ever needed someone to stop and really pay attention to you? Have you ever needed anyone to stop and just listen to you? If you've ever had that need, do you remember the value that you felt? The importance that you felt? The affirmation that you felt? Maybe they didn't say anything. They just stood there and listened to you. Because at that time, you didn't need words. You just needed to be heard. You just needed to be seen. You just needed to be known. Now, women are really feeling this. Guys are feeling this less. Because we want to solve things. And yet sometimes what's not needed is a solution. It's just the ear. It's just someone saying, "You matter enough for me to give you my attention. You are worth that." Jesus says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." He sends her back with blessing. Go in peace. Go in wholeness. Go in soundness. Go with all things being well. Go with assurance. Go with alignment. Go without worry or fear. And if you would ask that woman, she would tell you, I'm glad he interrupted me. I'm glad that he stopped me on my behalf. I'm glad that he made time to engage me on the level of my deeper needs. I'm glad that he affirmed and included me. And if you had asked Jairus, he would tell you too, I'm glad that he stopped. Now that I have the benefit of the full experience, I didn't like it then. I was in a hurry because my daughter was sick, and I would be told later that my daughter is dead. But because I heard her story of how Jesus was able, and Jesus was able to tell me, don't be afraid, just believe in me. I had what I needed to go into that room and believe that Jesus, yes, could hear, no, raise my daughter. I'm glad that he interrupted. And his interruption, his words were both pronouncement and announcement. By calling her daughter, he was declaring both what she was and what she would become. She was a daughter of Abraham by birth, but she'd be a daughter of God by death. Not of her own, but of his dying on the cross and his being raised from the dead. I now can imagine how she felt, because Jesus interrupted my life. Jesus stopped me. Jesus paid attention to me. Jesus touched me. Jesus made me whole. And he now calls me to be willing to stop and give time to others. Who needs you to stop and make time? Faces and names in these past 26 hours have come across your mind and on your hearts. As you've listened to these interviews and conversations, what has the Lord awakened within you? Will you make time for it? Will you be willing to be inconvenienced by it? Will you be prompted to make some adjustments? Take a risk and see God there. Father, thank you. Thank you that there are so many of us who have our own stories of how you interrupted us. With plans of our own making, with agendas of our own assigning, you stopped us. You called us. And oh God, your voice was so strong. Your work in our lives so apparent that we could not resist. We had to respond. God, we thank you. We thank you for times where you connected our journey with the journeys of other people, some whom we knew and some whom we did not know. But the parallel nature was not accidental. It was purposeful. And God, on occasions we were the woman with the word, and on occasions we were Jairus needing the word. We thank you for orchestrating them to bring blessing to us both. And now, God, for this call to be neighbor, pro-neighbor, for faces, the names, the places, the people that you have caused to rise up within our spirit. Will you give us now the courage to lean in? And yes, perhaps even be inconvenienced. But oh God, just like neither Jairus nor the woman necessarily saw their place in this grand narrative of redemption, neither knew that their lives and the events of their lives would be told to bless others. We do not know who's watching, who's observing, and how what our obedience will cause them to see, to know, to understand about who you are, the power that you have. God, I thank you for each person here, for the institutions that they lead and represent, for the differences that they are making, not just in their physical location, but in the kingdom of you. And I pray now for refreshing and renewal as they continue to walk this path.